Well, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to this session. Again, you're in for a treat to hear from Derek Davis. My name is Mike Jensen. I'm a fellow of the International Center for Law and Religion Studies. It's a privilege to be with you today, and I have the opportunity briefly to introduce Derek so that all of the time that's possible can be left for him. Derek has an impressive academic background. He is a graduate of Baylor University and Baylor Law School. He holds a Master of Arts in Church-State Studies from Baylor University and a doctorate in philosophy and humanities from the University of Texas at Dallas. He's a former dean of the College of Humanities and a former dean of the Graduate School at Mary Hardin Baylor in Benton, Texas. And significantly, from 1995 to 2006, he was the director of the J.M. Dawson Institute of Church State Studies at Baylor University. That was the time during which I first met Derek. As might be expected, Derek is the recipient of a number of prestigious awards that are outlined in the brochure, and he's the author of numerous books and articles, academic journals, pieces for magazines on the subject matter of religious liberty, but also bearing on the subject that he's going to talk with you about today. So let's welcome Derek Davis.
Okay, thank you, Mike, for a very kind introduction. I appreciate it. And thank all of you for being here. I appreciate it. As Mike said, I basically, my background is Baylor University, Baptist University in Waco, Texas. I was there for quite some time. Had the opportunity to meet Mike during that time. Used to travel a lot with Cole Durham and Elizabeth Clark and others here at BYU. really enjoyed my relationship with BYU. I think a lot of this university, it's done a lot for religious liberty, and I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you all today. Okay, the topic is religion in the workplace. Some of you might be employers and are here for that reason. If that is the case, might you just raise your hand? Okay, several of you. Hope I can say something that will help you. Let me just kind of read for you the basic law. Let me get you to move to the next slide there. Okay. It comes out of Title VII of the 64 Civil Rights Act, which prohibits employers, except religious organizations, they're exempted from all this, from discriminating against individuals because of their religion in hiring, firing, and other terms and conditions of employment. Title VII also requires employers to reasonably accommodate the religious practices of an employee or prospective employee, unless to do so would create an undue hardship upon the employer. Basically, that last sentence is what we're going to talk about today. But of course, as you notice, there is a rather large exemption here for churches, temples, mosques, religious institutions of all kinds, including educational institutions like BYU. So, you know, if BYU wants to hire only Mormons, it can hire only Mormons. If Baylor wants to hire only Baptists, which it does not, of course, it can hire only Baptists. In most cases, private employers are not permitted to even talk about religion in an interview. Whereas here at BYU, if you're interviewing for a faculty position, of course, they're going to ask you about your faith. But we'll get into more of that momentarily. In any case, basically what this means is that employers may not treat employees more or less favorably because of their religion. It also means that employees cannot be required to participate or refrain from participating in a religious activity as a condition of employment. In other words, you can't, for example, say you have to attend prayer meetings if you're going to work here. That's a violation of Title VII. Employers must reasonably accommodate employees' sincerely held religious practices, unless doing so would impose an undue hardship on the employer. Employers must take steps to prevent religious harassment of the employees. We'll talk about that too. Employers may not retaliate against employees for asserting rights under Title VII. So we'll take each one of these topics in turn. So let's first start with religious accommodation. There you go. Okay, what is reasonable accommodation? Religious employees often confront conflicts between their employment obligations and their religious obligations. Title VII provides that an employer must reasonably accommodate an employee's religious beliefs and practices. So basically an accommodation is one that eliminates the employee's conflict between his religious practices and work requirements and that does not cause an undue hardship on the employer. So, here's a few examples of requested accommodations. An employee may need a particular day off each year for a religious holiday. You might expect to be off for Christmas or for Easter. You can request that. and unless it creates some kind of undue hardship, and we're coming to that, basically the employer should try to accommodate that request. You can refrain from work every week on his or her, on your Sabbath. An accommodation might be to wear a particular kind of religious garb, a headscarf, or wear some kind of religious pin, or to have a place to pray during the day. This is something that many employers have found they need to accommodate with regard to Muslim employees. They want to go pray several times a day, and they need a very quiet place to pray and face toward Mecca. Also, you might have a situation that would include shift swaps between employees, voluntary assignment substitutions, flexible scheduling, lateral transfers to other positions in the company, use of lunchtime in exchange for early departure at the end of the day. An employer could allow an employee who is a Friday night Sabbath observer to work longer hours on, say, Monday through Thursday to enable the employee to leave early on Friday. an employer may require an employee to use paid time off, such as personal or vacation days, to meet an employee's required accommodation. An employer may not simply refuse to accommodate an employee. If the employer claims that accommodation is not feasible because it would result in an undue hardship, the employer must demonstrate the effect accommodation would have on the business. That is, the employer must prove the undue hardship. let me give you just a couple of cases that would illustrate this. This is a case, it's not that old, about 8 years old, 2009 I think it was. This was a fundamentalist LDA family, basically a father and three sons, and one of the sons decided to defect from the fundamentalist LDS faith, and he got quite a bit of harassment from his father and from his brothers, and they basically were recording conversations that he had with them and that sort of thing. But in the end, once he filed suit, after he was fired because he would not reconvert back to fundamentalist LDS, he filed suit and actually won the suit and won a rather large damage award for religious bias in employment. So you have to make some accommodations. Even if it's family. Doesn't matter if it's family. okay, there was another case that involved a transportation company. This was a workplace that we might say was saturated with the religious views of the president. He had constant prayer meetings with his employees, required them to attend the prayer meetings. He thought that taking sick leave was ungodly. So if you took sick leave, he was in your face about that. Several of them went to the EEOC, complained about it. he had to pay nearly a $1 million award to the aggrieved employees. So, employers should not schedule tests or training in a manner that precludes the participation of Sabbath or religious holiday observers. As with the scheduling of work, the employer must attempt to accommodate the religious needs of the employee. The employee cannot be unreasonable in demanding accommodation. For example, if the same test or training for a job is being given at another location on another day, the employee may be required to take it elsewhere. In addition, the employee may be required to use personal time to take the test or training. Okay, what's an undue hardship? This is sort of the out for the employer if he feels like he cannot accommodate the employee. The basic rule is that an employer is not required to provide an accommodation that causes it an undue hardship. This means that an employer need not incur more than minimal costs in order to accommodate an employee's religious practices. The EEOC has interpreted this to mean that an employer can show that a requested accommodation causes it an undue hardship if accommodating an employee's religious practice requires anything more than a number of different things. For example, ordinary administrative costs, diminishes efficiency in other jobs, infringes on other employees' job rights or benefits, impairs workplace safety, causes co-workers to carry the accommodated employee's share of potentially hazardous or burdensome work, or if the proposed accommodation conflicts with another law or regulation. So you don't have to show a whole lot. Just has to cost you some money or create, you know, some havoc within the business, and you can probably show an undue hardship. Are all employers required to accommodate their employees' religious needs? Federal law applies only to companies with more than 15 employees. So if you're a small business, be it a sole proprietorship or a partnership or a small corporation, and you have 15 or less employees, really none of this applies to you. I mean, it's kind of a carte blanche to discriminate however you want to. Yes, sir.
Depends on the state. In Wyoming, the law is one.
Yes. Yeah, there are several states that, you know, don't particularly like this, and so they have created their own laws to create a situation where it's less than 15 employees that you have to have before you're held liable for any of this. I know California is one. What about Utah? Anybody know what the law is here in Utah? Okay.
Do you find an employer?
Sorry? Yeah, you know, you can have, you know, a corporation with, you know, 100 employees, and I suppose you could split up your corporation and create four or five different corporations, and if they all ostensibly had different functions and responsibilities and purposes, then that would be a way to avoid this. So, you know, if you want to try to avoid it, we'll go see a lawyer and do some nice planning, and you can probably get out of some of this. But, of course, you know, there are a lot of businesses. I don't know what the percentages would be, but I would guess at least half the business in the United States would be 15 or less employees, right? I mean, it would be substantial. I'm sorry?
Probably even bigger percentage.
Yeah. And actually, this is a rule that I don't really like. I mean, I think the purpose of the rule is that, you know, there would be such a flurry of, you know, discrimination cases filed if you, you know, restricted it to one or less employees, that the courts would just be flooded with cases. There are probably other reasons too, but, you know, for me, you know, any business, no matter how many employees you have, ought to try to comply with these rules, because they're built around just basic principles of fairness and rightness and equity, trying to treat people in the right way, no matter what their religious faith is. Okay. What are the employee's responsibilities? Employees seeking to observe their religious beliefs and practices have a responsibility to do their part to help resolve conflicts between job duties and religious needs. To this end, an employee must tell his or her employer about the religious commitment at the time the job is accepted or immediately upon becoming observant or aware of the need for an accommodation. Employees must also be clear when explaining why they need an accommodation. Although this is kind of a controversial area based on a case that happened a couple years ago. It was a case where a young Muslim girl applied for a job at Abercrombie and Fitch. And when she did the interview, she was interviewed by a young female. But the Muslim girl was, of course, wearing a headscarf. And they had this conversation about the job. And the interviewer liked her and actually recommended her for the job. But she was unsure about the headscarf. She didn't know what her superiors would think. She went to her manager, and the manager said, "I don't know, go talk to my boss." So she went up the ladder and talked to him. He didn't want to hire her because the headscarf would violate what they had, what they called a look policy for Abercrombie and Fitch. So they didn't hire her. The girl filed suit, and the issue was, do you have to ask the girl? Well, you're really not supposed to ask the girl. Is she obligated to tell you that she needs a religious accommodation, or what? Well, a lot of the cases talk about this interactive process, but the bottom line is you're really not supposed to ask her about her religion. I mean, it's all over her because she's wearing this headscarf, but you're really not supposed to ask her about the religion, because if you do and you don't hire her, I mean, that's just prima facie evidence that the reason you didn't hire her was because of her religion. So the rules are you're not supposed to talk about religion. So if you don't get hired, then sure enough, after you're not hired, you can file suit and complain that there was no accommodation made. But basically in this case, they said that she has no obligation to bring it up herself, that if any of the motivating reason for not hiring her is her religion, which actually turned out to be the case, then you have violated the law. So she won this case against Abercrombie and Fitch, and she got a rather nice damage award from it. Okay.
Question.
Okay.
If Abercrombie just banned all hats on employees, would that have been unfair, according to the Smith case?
I'm sorry, if they did what?
If they just banned all hats for all employees, would they have been okay?
No, you have to make, I mean, the law is in favor of religious liberty. You have to make an accommodation unless it creates a real hardship. Banning, all headscarves and all, hats or caps or whatever during work would not be an acceptable practice. So, of course, there are other kinds of cases, too, that come up. Rastafarians like to wear these dreadlocks. Well, can you discriminate against a Rastafarian because you don't like the way they wear their hair? And the answer is no. I mean, you have to make some accommodation for them, unless, if you can come up with some hardship, as I say, if you think it's not safe to have such a worker in your workplace because the dreadlocks are going to get into somebody's food if it's a restaurant or something like that. I can see that. I think there was a case where there was a fireman, and I think it was a Sikh who wore a long beard, and they have to wear these masks often when they're putting out fires, and they thought that would interfere with the effect or the competency of the mask. So that was a reasonable undue hardship. Okay, I think we go to the next slide now. All right, what counts as religious belief? Although the law requires that employers must accommodate sincerely held religious beliefs that conflict with work requirements, courts rarely question either the sincerity or religiosity of a particular belief. The law's intention is to provide protection and accommodation for a broad spectrum of religious practices and belief, not merely those beliefs based upon organized or recognized teachings of a particular religion. And basically what the courts have done here is they have followed, I mean, most of the Christian denominations are going to qualify. Islam is going to qualify, Hinduism, Judaism, Buddhism, all the known religions, but there are lots of unknown religions that many people don't think about or know anything about. So what the courts have done here is pretty much follow what the rules are with respect to conscientious objectors. Back in the 60s, there was a series of cases, Seeger and Welsh primarily, that said, you know, if somebody is about to get drafted into the army and they don't have a traditional religious belief in a supreme being or God or something like that, if they can show that they have kind of a worldview that is moral, that kind of produces the same kinds of things in a person's life and worldview that religion produces, then that will qualify. And they can qualify as a conscientious objector. So the same thing is here. You don't really have to subscribe to a well-known religion. You just need to satisfy a court that this is a serious belief on your part, and it'll count as religion. Okay, may an employee wear religious garb or symbols to work? We've already talked a little bit about this. Employers must attempt to accommodate employees who, for religious reasons, must maintain a particular physical appearance or manner of dress in keeping with the tenets of their religion. Again, accommodation is required only if it can be made without undue hardship to the employer. And typically here, only safety measures will really qualify. I think I've got a couple of cases here also that would illustrate this. For example, the EEOC took a case from a Muslim employee who was discharged by Federal Express for refusing to shave due to religious requirements. The court said that there was no reason that Federal Express couldn't accommodate this person. He wasn't doing anything in particular that required his beard to be shaved. They awarded him $140,000 in damages. When you see some of the damage awards in these cases, you'll be a little bit more careful as an employer. I mean, they run in the millions on occasion. Here's another case that also involved a bearded employee. A no-beard requirement for firefighters was upheld as a valid safety rule since facial hair interfered with a good fit on those respirators. That was the mask I was trying to think of what to call it a minute ago. Yes?
This is something that they must wear or have as part of their religious practice. What about other pins like, you know, people wear the cross or you know, other religious emblems that aren't a must-have?
Yeah. Well, it's a good question. There are lots of people who want to wear a crucifix or wear a necklace with a crucifix or some other kind of badge or piece of clothing. And, you know, maybe it's not mandatory, but they like to wear it on regular occasions. This also comes up, you know, and sometimes employees want to put stuff on their walls, copy the Ten Commandments or put a Bible on their table or something like that. And basically the courts here, you know, tend to say, once again, you've got to try to make an accommodation for these people. If you can show an undue hardship, that's fine, but otherwise you've got to accommodate them. The only real exception here is with regard to public employees who are uniformed, like policemen. The courts have almost uniformly said here, you don't have the right to wear your crucifix. You know, this is an important position. The police department has the right to require you to wear, you know, a certain uniform, appear in a certain way to the public, and that sort of thing. Same thing is true in the military. Again, the courts have said that with regard to military uniforms, be it whatever branch of service, that you can require mandatory uniforms there. But otherwise, you've got to try to, you know, accommodate these people. There are several cases where employees want to have a Bible on their desk. Some other employees don't like it so much. They think this employee is showing off or, you know, trying to proselytize. And that may be true, but again, the courts have said if it's not a big deal, I mean, if they're not, you know, pushing the Bible in your face every time you walk in their office, and they're not constantly using it as a proselytizing vehicle or something like that, then you've got to accommodate that. It's a little bit different in public schools, because there the courts have said that, you know, if you've got a Bible on your desk, it's, you know, you're a public employee, and you're giving the appearance, the impression, that as a representative of the state, that you're religious and that the institution that you work for is religious, and why don't all y'all become religious like me? And all of y'all as 8-year-old children are pretty impressionable and probably more tempted to be like me, your teacher, than you would be if you were adults. So anyway, you'll find in all these cases there's not any hard and fast rules. There's a lot of gray here, not a lot of black and white. But you just have to try to follow the principles that are laid out, and sometimes we have to rely on the courts to tell us what the rules are. Yeah.
Oh, quick note, if anyone wants to ask a question, now let us run the mic to you. I forgot to mention this at the beginning, but I have a question. When they're awarding damages in these cases, are there punitive damages involved? Is that why the number grows so large, or are they just mainly compensatory and they're saying, hey, you lost wages, future wages? Or is the court actually saying, you know what, because you didn't reasonably accommodate, we're going to give a punitive award as well?
No, I think there are punitive damages awarded here too. You know, if it's intentional and you should have known better, you talked to a lawyer and the lawyer told you to quit and you kept doing it, you know, you can be held liable for punitive damages. And a lot of these cases say that. Yeah. Okay, where are we here? Can an employer ask about the employer's religion? No, is the basic answer. Questions concerning an applicant's religion or the religious holidays observed by an applicant are impermissible. For example, an employer may not ask an applicant, does your religion prevent you from working weekends or holidays? You just can't say that. It's an obvious effort to inquire into a person's religion, and if you don't get hired, you're going to get a lawsuit slapped all over you. Or likewise, you shouldn't ask, what church do you attend? Are you a Mormon? You know, you just don't ask that. Yes, sir.
I read a recent article about medical confidentiality, in which a doctor lost a lawsuit because one of his employees felt like she was obligated by her religion to tattle on a patient violating such and such. And so the recommendation was that we ask employees, do you have any religious belief that would require you to violate patient confidentiality without mentioning any particular religion? Mm-hmm. Is that advice going to be upheld by a court or not?
I think it's fine. Just don't talk about religion.
Well, we're specifically asking if somebody has a religious belief such and such.
Well, can't
that would be incompatible with the employment.
Couldn't you ask the question or make the demand without inquiring into their religion?
Oh no, that wasn't the result. That wasn't the advice in that particular article.
Seems like you just ask them whether they have any problem adhering to the policy regarding patient privacy. You know,
exactly.
Just ask it. You don't have to ask, frame it in religion. Is there anything that would prompt you to violate that?
Right.
You don't have to frame it.
You just can't ask the question about religion. I mean, it's suicide. Unless you've got a real friendly, you know, interviewee who doesn't care about suing you, but if, you know, if they're a litigious person, it's suicide.
It's also real suicide if patient confidentiality is violated.
That's true. That's true.
It's a real mess.
Yeah, it is a real mess. Yes, sir.
So if you have a company and you have a dress standard, you know, you don't want visible tattoos, and you're applying it consistently across the board, no visible tattoos, no piercing other than a female with one set of earrings, a certain dress, certain color pants, even provide them some of the clothes.
Mm-hmm.
How do you do a religious accommodation? And it's a clean shave look, no beards, no scraggle.
Mm-hmm.
How do you do a religious accommodation?
Well, again, those are nice policies, and they sound good. They sound principled and moral and uplifting. But if somebody comes in and they have a religious reason to violate that, and it's part of, it's a tenet of their faith, you have to try to accommodate them. You just do. Now, you can go through the interview, and if you can get through it and not ask about religion and figure out what they're all about and just not hire them on other grounds, then you're okay. But if religion comes up and, you know, you don't try to accommodate that person, I mean, what would be your undue hardship? What would be your defense? What would be your out?
The whole point of business is to present an image to your customer.
Okay.
If somebody walks in, and has a full, what is it, a burqa, mm-hmm. the full body covering,
mm-hmm.
that would have a detrimental effect to our customer base.
No question.
People would stop coming if we put a burqa. This is all hypothetical. This is not real. I'm exaggerating to examine this issue.
No, it's not hypothetical at all. I was in a restaurant 2 days ago. With a couple of people, and we had a waitress who was wearing a headscarf, and I asked the two people I was with, how does that hit you? And they didn't like it, frankly. And I said, well, if you were running this place, would you hire her? And they said no. And I said, why not? And they said, well, we think it would have a bad impression upon our customers. We might lose customers if they know that we hire Muslims. I said, well, that may be true, but might you also gain other customers if you hire Muslims? Might other people appreciate the fact that you respect religious freedom and you like diversity and, you know, you don't discriminate against people. You try to treat everybody fairly no matter what they believe. So, I mean, you can go round and round about this, but the law basically is you have to try to accommodate that person unless you can create some kind of undue hardship. And I don't think an undue hardship is this is going to make a bad impression on our clientele. Yes?
I don't see how it would make a bad impression on the clientele. I would appreciate going to a restaurant where somebody
okay.
wears a burqa because, I mean, I go to a restaurant. I go to restaurants and you experience people that are very open about their LGBTQ or whatever their preferences. But why can't they be open about their burqa and wear their...
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, or wear their shirt that proudly talks about, you know, their faith.
Right.
There's no reason that should have any impact on their business whatsoever.
Okay. I would surmise that half the country would totally agree with you, and half the country would think you're crazy. Right?
Probably.
Well, that's different. We talked about the uniforms. I mean, well, that's a good question, too. I mean, most of the uniform cases deal with public employees, firemen, policemen, military personnel, et cetera. I don't know that I've read a case. I'm not saying there aren't any. I certainly am not familiar with all the case history in this whole area. But, you know, if you're talking about a private employer, say a laundry facility that does laundry for, you know, 100 different businesses in Provo. and they all wear the same uniform, you know, a white laundry uniform. Can you mandate that? That is a white uniform without a headscarf or without some kind of other symbol or button or badge or something like that that indicates a person's faith. And I think the courts are going to say, you have to accommodate that person. You can live with one or two people being just a little bit different to accommodate their faith. This is a country that believes in religious freedom. We don't penalize people just because they wear a badge on their lapel. I mean, you know, you may not like that result. Probably a lot of people wouldn't, but I think that's what the court would say. Yeah.
What if the person's actions, say like they're constantly proselyting or they're, you know, saying, well, if you don't my religion, you're going to go to hell to all the customers that come in.
Mm-hmm.
Can you fire them for that reason?
Yeah.
Okay.
We're coming to that. That's religious harassment. We're coming to that in just a minute. But to kind of give you an answer in advance, that's prohibited. I mean, it can be, you know, once a year, hey, I want to tell you about my faith. Listen to what I have to say. Would you like to come to church with me? But if it's browbeating people on a regular basis and, you know, sticking the Bible in their face and reading them Bible verses and telling them they're going to hell if they don't listen to you, that's religious harassment. And, you're creating an undue hardship upon the employer that you work for, and you can be fired, and the courts will say that's fine. He deserved to be fired.
Toxic work environment. Would that be creating a toxic work environment?
Yes, absolutely. Okay. Are we on the last one?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, do employees have accommodation rights under other laws? Basically, they do. I don't want to get into this because it gets kind of complicated. But I mean, you don't have to sue under Title VII here. I mean, you could also sue under the First Amendment Free Exercise Clause if you're an employee who feels like your religious rights are being violated. The standards are a little bit harder to meet on both sides, actually. But you could still do that, of course.
You mean the defense is harder too, is that?
Yes. Yes, it is. And of course there are also these mini RFRAs, these little state RFRAs, state religious freedom acts that you can sue under as well. But the standards there are probably a little more difficult too. Yes.
My son works for a big company, and I'm not going to name the company. Big company that has international offices around, and he was told during the issue of the, you know, when we were voting for same-sex marriage, and that was a issue, every office in the company was asked to put a rainbow outside their office door. Now he wasn't in favor of same-sex marriage. And but you know, it wasn't like they asked them. They said, we would like you to put a rainbow outside each office door. I felt like that was reverse discrimination or whatever. I don't know if that's the right term, but I felt like that was forcing.
It was
harassment. Anyway, mm-hmm. Do you have a comment on that?
Yeah. There are a couple of cases on that. There was one case where another big company had put posters all around the lobbies and in the hallways and that sort of thing, promoting the idea that they were non-discriminatory. They paid no attention to color or race or national origin or ethnicity or gender or religion or anything. They were going to, you know, really treat people on a fair and equal basis. And they were very, very proud of that. Well, one employee who's, let's just call him a fundamentalist Christian, didn't like this too much, so he started posting all over his office and just outside his office door his own posters, sort of bashing gays. And he said he took it that the employer's policy was to harass him because they knew that, you know, he didn't believe in that stuff and he was anti-gay and all this. The employer won that case. The court said that it's not appropriate for one person to try to eliminate an overall good, positive standard and policy advocated by the company. So that was a form of harassment on his part against the company in general, against all the employees who worked in the company. So your son is probably fine with not posting the rainbow outside his office.
Well, it was a clique of office, you know, it wasn't just his office.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, for a company to say, we as a company are behind this political religious policy, and you have to signify by the poster that you are too.
Yeah.
So there's no legal action against that?
Against the company adopting the policy and putting all the rainbows around? Well, only if somebody complains, and you know, I think that's probably. I mean, they might be retaliating. You might make the argument that they're retaliating against some employee or some group of employees, but you know, short of that, it's probably a form of harassment to some employees, and perhaps you could make the argument that it's also harassing to clientele, customers, who come in. Not everybody is going to agree with that policy, you know. It'd be okay if you have 14 employees, right? Slice your personnel. I'm not trying to make light of it, but these are difficult issues. I mean, the gay rights thing, the whole sexual orientation thing, this is a major point of division, point of departure in America now. I mean, you know, we have all these cases where, you know, you're a Christian and you're running a bakery, and a gay couple comes in and they want you to make a cake for their wedding. And I'm going, oh no, you know, I can't do this. I can't support these people and make a cake. And you really feel this strongly. Well, do I have to make that cake? We've got a Supreme Court case coming out of Colorado that, you know, is this very issue now. We're going to finally get some definitive language on this. And I don't know what the result will be. But my point is simply that this whole issue about gay rights, it looks like we're headed the way that we went with racial discrimination. I mean, we got to the point as a nation that we were not going to tolerate it. At least we were going to try not to tolerate it officially. It goes on unofficially all the time, of course. But officially, we're not going to tolerate it. And so it became a policy that virtually trumped everything. It began to trump religious liberty. I mean, back in the 80s, for example, there was this case that came out of Bob Jones University, a fundamentalist college, that had a policy against interracial dating and interracial marriage. Well, you know, they had some students sue them over this, and basically the court said, this is unacceptable. We do not accept racial discrimination in this country any longer. You do not have a right under the free exercise clause to say we do not allow interracial dating. That's a you know, a terrible form of racial discrimination, and we're just not going to tolerate it. And if you keep it up, you know, we're going to keep your tax exemption. So, you know, it could be that we're headed the same way with sexual orientation, sexual discrimination. I don't know. We're in transition, I think. Somebody else have their hand up? Okay. Let's talk a little more specifically about religious harassment. Yeah. What is harassment based on religion? Just like sexual harassment, religious harassment can occur in either or both of two forms. One, there can be what's called a quid pro quo harassment, or secondly, there can be what's called a hostile environment harassment. The first one, quid pro quo harassment, occurs when a harasser seeks to exchange a tangible employment benefit for compliance with the harasser's religious demands, for example, conversion and participation in religious worship. And when the demand is not complied with, the harasser engages in an adverse employment action. So, I'll give you a raise if you stop wearing that headscarf. That's a form of harassment. Quid pro quo. You do this and I'll do this for you. The courts say that just doesn't work. I'll give you a promotion if you'll stop praying, you know, with the employee next to you in the office next to you. That's a quid pro quo, which is prohibited. All right, what's a hostile work environment form of harassment? This occurs when there's offensive conduct directed at an employee because of that employee's religion, and where the conduct is so severe or pervasive that it affects the terms or conditions of employment and the employer fails to take reasonable steps to stop the conduct. To determine this, a court will look at the overall facts of the case, including the frequency of the discriminatory conduct, its severity, whether it's physically threatening or humiliating, or a mere offensive utterance, and whether it unreasonably interferes with an employee's work performance. When is an employer liable for a hostile work environment? If coworkers are creating a hostile work environment through religious harassment, an employer is liable if it knew or should have known of the religious harassment and failed to implement prompt and appropriate corrective action. If a supervisor creating a hostile work environment through religious harassment, an employer is liable. The employer can show as a defense that the harassment resulted in no tangible adverse employment action, such as a demotion or a termination. I think I had a case here that I was going to talk about there. Yeah, this was in a bank. You had an assistant bank manager who said that he was being harassed, and then he was fired due to his Baptist religious beliefs. I don't think this guy was from Baylor. Surely not. He declined his manager's invitations to have drinks after work and did not go to the bank's holiday party because of his beliefs against drinking alcohol. The manager then made openly hostile comments about the employee's religious and church activities. There were numerous comments about the church boy, the choir boy, the Christ boy, and church boy don't drink any. The court found a sufficient frequency of the negative comments prior to the discharge to create a viable harassment case. So, you know, that's a pretty classic case of religious harassment. I mean, if it's just once or twice, you know, just something that happens off the cuff, and you know, then that's fine. But these were persistent accusations and forms of harassment that the court did not approve. Here's another case. A Muslim employee was hired right after the 9/11 terrorist attacks. It appears that people in the workplace decided to vent all of their anger over the attacks on him. And of course, this happened everywhere across the country, right? If you're a Muslim, you know, you're going to get your house egged, or, you know, you're going to get, you know, your roof burned, or, you know, you're going to get harassed at work. People were not high on Muslims at the time. He was called numerous offensive names based upon his Arab origin and Muslim religion and subjected to ongoing pranks and hostile comments. The evidence also showed that when the employee complained to management, he was told, quote, don't take things so seriously, maintain a positive attitude, and let it roll off. Management also told him that he shouldn't be so paranoid. He was accused of, quote, trying to build a case, quote, end quote, against the company. The court found a constant and repetitive abuse founded upon misperceptions that all Muslims possess hostile designs against the United States, that all Muslims support jihad, that all Muslims were sympathetic to the 9/11 attack, and that all Muslims are proponents of radical Islam. The company failed to take action to counter these stereotypes and stop the harassment. Of course, this is, we still have this problem. We're still not familiar with what Islam is in America. We're learning bits and pieces, but there are still people who are very hostile toward Islam, not only because of 9/11, but because of all the terrorist attacks that are perpetrated around the world, and, you know, frankly, a great majority of them tend to be perpetrated by Muslims. So they're not very popular, not only here, but in other parts of the world other than the Middle East. But, you know, stereotyping Muslims in the way that this court is pointing out that Muslims were stereotyped in this particular business is a problem that we've got to get past. We all know good Muslims, I think. They're not all terrorists. Here's another case I'll just mention briefly. A county social service department was justified in firing an employee who insisted that his Christian religion required him to share his faith with clients. He kept religious signs and symbols openly to view by clients in his office and initiated prayer with clients. He refused the reasonable accommodation of being allowed to keep the religious symbols more discreetly and refused to stop expressing his faith to clients. The court balanced the employee's First Amendment religious rights against violation of the Establishment Clause prohibition against promoting religion. So, you know, again, if he had just been an occasional proselytizer witnessing his faith to, you know, one or two clients here and there, that would not have been a problem, but he wouldn't quit.
Was that a public employee?
I don't think so. Let's see.
I was just wondering because private.
Yeah, he was a public employee. Yeah. County Social Service Department.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
I was just going to ask if my understanding is correct that private employers and business owners are never governed by the First Amendment's Establishment Clause. And therefore, none of their employees would be able to bring a free exercise clause. It would only apply when it's, say, a public university or some other state agent or representation of the state.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, most of the cases that do involve public employees, they're suing not only under Title VII, but they're also suing under the First Amendment, whereas private employers are just using the statutory means. Yeah. Okay. One
question?
More? Okay.
Do you see the pendulum starting to swing the other way for the past, you know, couple of decades since this has passed? Of course, these have been where the majority religions have been the more Christian religions, and those bringing these harassment have been from minority religions, or and now you know the statistics are starting to swing the other direction. Now you're seeing a majority of the population, of course, supporting a lot of the what you would call the LGBTQ agenda, and so you could see that agenda being kind of pushed on by employers a lot. To the point where
the guy
it starts
wanting to put up rainbows all over the office.
Well,
right?
that's you know, in other words, that. The pendulum may swing the other direction, and all of a sudden you see, especially these high-tech companies, which tend to be more progressive, that those who favor a more traditional religious, you know, background may feel they're being harassed, and the tables might be turned. Are you seeing any of that happen?
Sorry?
Yeah, that's right. Pushed out the CEO or somebody of that.
Yeah, it's complicated, right?
Yeah, yes.
It gets really, really complicated. It used to be that the people who brought all these suits were Christians, complaining about minority religions. And now it seems like the tables have turned somewhat. It's, you know, those who are minority religions feel like they have more established rights in our society, and so they can assert their own rights. And this has been true, I think, for at least 50 or 60 years, probably beginning with, you know, the Jehovah's Witnesses, although they're Christian, they're definitely a Christian group, but a non-traditional Christian group who begin to assert their own rights, the right not to salute the flag in the public schools and that sort of thing. And you're seeing lots of lawsuits now, of course, by Rastafarians and Muslims and Buddhists and others who feel aggrieved in their rights. You know, so to some extent, I mean, I see some progress here. I guess to some extent I see, you know, some regress. But, I mean, if you think about it, at some point every religion was sort of heretical. I mean, we started off 2,000 years ago in what we call, you know, the advent of Christian civilization. We basically had Catholics and Orthodox who were competing against each other, and they were calling each other heretics. But certainly everybody else from the perspective of either one of those two faiths was a heretic. You had all different kinds of minority religions beginning to grow up over the centuries. Eventually you had a Protestant Reformation in the 16th century, and all those groups coming out of the Reformation, the Lutherans and the Presbyterians and the Baptists and the Amish and those people, they were all heretics according to the Catholics, right? We don't think of Lutherans and Baptists anymore as being heretics so much. In our own day, Scientology is not quite accepted. It's only been around, you know, a little more than half a century, but it's a little more accepted than it was, although still heretical to some extent. In Utah, I think the LDS is pretty well established. They're thought of with great regard, but you go to other places in the country and they're heretics. They're crazy people, right? I'm not trying to be critical myself. I'm just trying to make an observation that this is the way it is. But so it's, you know, it's back and forth now. It's all different groups, you know, sort of slashing and trying to have their way with the other. That's a regress to me because, you know, we're fighting. But on the other hand, we're fighting because as a nation, we're beginning to recognize that diversity is a positive value. We need to try to be fair to everybody and not discriminate on religious grounds against people in the schools, in the workplace, and, you know, in public realms, et cetera, et cetera. But it's really complicated now. I mean, we're not as nearly as mature as I hope we'll be 100 or 200 or 500 years from now. I mean, I have a vision that diversity is sort of the name of the game, and this is the way that we need to go, and it's respect for each other. But then I see what goes on in political elections, and not only here in the United States but other places, and it's just chaos. I mean, it's just one group fighting against another, and some groups totally unwilling to accept other groups, and you wonder if we're ever going to be able to live together, you know, with common values. So I don't know what the answer is. I think we have to try to be fair to everybody. That makes sense to me. I don't care who we are. If we're human beings, we need to try to construct our laws and live according to the principles that we're all of equal value before God. And anything short of that, I think we're headed in the wrong direction. So anyway, he's showing me this. The sign for no more time left, so I guess we better stop there. I appreciate you coming today. Appreciate your attention and your very, very good questions. Thank you.